This is Pure Decking, show number 347 for Thursday, May the 2nd be with you, 2019. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and trying to hunt down the disclaimer. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Mad Men. Mad Men, what are you drinking?
I am drinking Bullet Bourbon.
Ah. We have, are you?
I need more Bullet Bourbon. There we go.
The distilled tears of a cloud.
Excellent, excellent. I'm actually hitting the Knob Creek single barrel again. That stuff is tasty. So, which sucks because it's also expensive. It's like I need to find really, really good bourbon that's like $10 for a bottle, and I know that doesn't exist. But you know, I can ask for a unicorn. Damn it!
You want $10 bourbon that's really good? Is all you said?
Yeah, something like that, as opposed to the $50 bottle.
Well, vote for Bernie and he will make that happen.
This is a picture of Aquaman.
So,
if we vote for that Asian guy, then he'll get me a bottle of Pappy a month. And he doesn't know that's what I'm going to spend $1,000 for.
So, a little bit of station news. We did bring IHN back last Saturday. So I think the plan is to continue doing it on Saturdays.
When we usually do it.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to be every Saturday. I don't know anything. It's not my damn show.
At this point, every Saturday until I have something else to do or Madman needs to do something else. And if our panel operator decides he wants to do something else, then fuck it, we'll have a week off. This isn't a hard and fast show anymore.
Excellent.
It's a little poking fun at the news. Strictly no politics. It is a zero politics show.
So Rats in the IRC is asking, what is IHN on? Are you talking about station? It's on G15. I have not made a space for it on the website yet. I need to actually redesign the site to make a spot for it, get a show feed up for it. I also need to swap out the built-in player on the site because it's still using Flash, and Flash has been dead for like 2 years. So I've been putting that shit off.
And when you ask what IHN is on, it was on crack.
No, it wasn't. Y'all were tripping mushrooms, dude.
Now we're trying to bring it back to just alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, they've got it. Madman and RU are setting the direction on that one, so I think it's just, as opposed to the stuff that interests me, like decking is, it's going to be what interests them. And then the rest of us trying to crack bad jokes.
Pretty much it.
Or trying to out-insult
each other. It's amateur hour.
Yeah.
If you're looking for stuff like Crowders, man, go pay for it. You want free, this is what you get.
Nice.
We don't urge you to turn your ad blocker off, that's all.
I'm making a point not to put ads on the site. That's actually a good point. If you're getting ads on Galaxy 15, either you've got malware installed, or let me know because the thing's gotten hacked. You should not be getting ads on G15. So, but I do need to redesign the website. So I'm actually open to suggestions. I haven't touched the design on the thing in 3 years, 4 years, something like that. It's been
been good for quite a while.
Yeah. But if we're gonna bring back other shows, I need to at least make a spot for them. So that's fine. And I've been meaning to clean up the archives for, a decade. So.
Ooh. Boop the Excite Bike menu.
Say that again? You want me to copy the Excite Bike menu?
Yeah, spoof it. That could be fun looking.
I mean, it can be done.
8-bit graphics.
Oh, come on. Everyone likes a Excite Bike. Sacros, back me up on this.
The game was frustrating as shit.
I did like the level editor, though.
As you can tell, we've all been getting into the retro games this week. After last week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that arcade site I found that had the preloaded Raspi images, dude, that thing's awesome.
Yeah, pretty good.
So now that one you definitely need the ad blocker for, though. Cycross, you've never played Excitebike?
Oh, dude.
Did you not have an NES? Were you on the Sega bandwagon?
He may be young. I don't know his age. Don't tell us your age.
Suppose that's possible. So, anyways, let's get into it here. I got two stories for kind of the opening discussion, just because the two headlines in a row are hilarious. So, just didn't do consoles at all as a kid. Seriously, get you a Raspi, and what's the website? Arcade Punks? Was that what it was? It's ArcadePunks.com. Make sure you have a good ad blocker, because they're crazy with the ads. And if you go under their, I think it's front-end downloads. Yeah, they got Raspi images preloaded with Emulation Station. I definitely recommend that. So, they've got C64 games on some of those, too. So, it's probably illegal as balls, because these things are preloaded with ROMs, but most of the stuff's abandonware anyways. So, So, anyways, it's a nice little setup. It's kind of a Dojo Link, actually, that Arcade Punks thing. That was a fun find. Anyways, first article I've got for tonight is from The Verge, and I threw it in TeamSpeak. I didn't throw it in IRC. So speaking of the IRC, tonight we've got myself, Cycross, Sardonyx, Rats, Iron Angel, and Madman in the IRC. If any more show up, we'll announce it. Might rerun it at the end. So the first one is from The Verge. Verizon is seeking a buyer for Tumblr, the blogging platform it acquired along with other Yahoo assets in 2017. The Wall Street Journal reports that Verizon has approached other companies in recent weeks that could be potential new homes for Tumblr. The platform hosts 465.4 million blogs and 172 billion posts, according to its About page. The journal notes that the sale process is ongoing and might not result in any transaction. On Thursday evening, Pornhub VP Corey Price claimed in a statement to BuzzFeed News that his company is extremely interested in buying Tumblr and very much looking forward to one day restoring it to its former glory with not safe for work content. The company did not say whether it had actually made any legitimate offer to Verizon.
The dude that does run Pornhub, though, is a bit of a troll.
I love that the way that went right into it. It's like Verizon has said Tumblr's for sale, and Pornhub's like, yes! Come on.
Good news, guys. You're not banned anymore. Go home. Your home is calling.
Yeah, Price is referring to a major change implemented last year when Tumblr took the controversial step of banning porn on its platform. The company has been using AI to detect and automatically block images and videos that contain certain adult content. Existing posts containing porn were made private and are no longer publicly accessible. The move resulted in harsh criticism towards the company and a steep decline in web traffic, but Tumblr has given no indication that it plans to reverse the decision. Pornhub quickly sought to attract those users that Tumblr drove away. Tumblr itself
really?
Was...
From Tumblr to Pornhub. How far the social justice warriors have fallen.
Tumblr itself was acquired by Yahoo for $1.1 billion in 2013 during the Mercer Meyer era as an attempt to revitalize and steer new, younger users to the sinking internet staple. But Yahoo never really knew what to do with Tumblr, and the microblogging site, with its millions of personal blogs and some of the weirdest, best things on the internet, did nothing to reverse Yahoo's business fortunes. That's the author's opinion, not mine. I'm just reading it. Rats, they blocked in and not safe for work content because it was getting the Tumblr app banned in the Apple App Store. Verizon finalized its $4.5 billion acquisition of Yahoo in, they paid a lot for Yahoo in 2017, which led it to taking ownership of Tumblr. Tumblr is currently part of the Verizon Media Group, formerly OATH, O-A-T-H, Oath? Yeah, I guess it'd be Oath. The capitalization threw me off. the umbrella brand for digital properties that Verizon ultimately controlled after its two buyouts of AOL and Yahoo. The journal notes that Verizon's attempt to offload Tumblr comes as it tries to make it the best of its collective media business after a $4.6 billion write-down last year. So they lost in a write-down more than they paid for Yahoo. That hurts. That hurts a lot.
They would use that for offset tax credits.
Oh, absolutely. But it still
hurts.
That
didn't hurt them whatsoever.
Depends on how much they're bringing in. That could be more than they brought in those years.
Well, yeah, that's really going to affect their stock price, but too.
You could say, is any tech company really valued correctly right now?
No.
That's what I mean. So these figures they throw around is nothing. It was never worth that to start with. So how can you lose what you're not worth?
They go with the worth is how much did you pay for it?
Verizon sold one of its Yahoo assets, Flickr, to SmugMug about a year ago. Guru Gorappan, the executive put in charge of... That's somebody's name? Sounds like a joke. And yes, I'm making fun of that guy's name because it sounds like Guru Gorapper or Gorappan. I don't know. Anyways, I guess I'm just being hyper-American there. The executive put in charge of Verizon Media Group last year later criticized that sell-off as too time-consuming without enough reward. But publicly, Verizon executives remain committed to the properties despite layoffs that have affected some of the sites and entertainment divisions. I hope there is no doubt about our commitment to Verizon Media Group and how it fits into our whole strategy. CEO Hans Vestberg said earlier this week, according to the journal. Tumblr, it seems, is not necessarily part of the strategy. But now that the question comes whether there's even a viable buyer for the platform in 2019, that won't let it slowly wither away. So, and then the second article, Ho Wrong. Nice. Yeah, and to follow that up, here's the BuzzFeed article. Just because I loved the order of the headlines because it actually came up in the feeds this way, where the first headline I saw was, you know, Verizon looking to sell Tumblr, and then the second headline was Pornhub is extremely interested in acquiring Tumblr. So I knew I had to do the stories back-to-back, right? Because it was just hilarious. Yeah, Pornhub Vice President Corey Price sent an email to BuzzFeed News that porn streaming giant is extremely interested in buying Tumblr, the once ultimately... or the once uniquely horny hub for young women and queer people that banned adult content last December, to the disappointment of many of its users. Price said that restoring Tumblr's not safe for work edge would be central to their acquisition of it, were it to actually happen. Tumblr, blah, 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 blah. We already read this. Let's see. Wait, Verizon hasn't done well with Tumblr. But yeah, there's nothing new in this article. I just loved... the headlines in order in the newsfeed. You know what I mean?
I'm just thinking if Tumblr does get owned by Pornhub, then the feminists are going to be attacking their own owners of the own site because it's Pornhub.
Maybe. I mean,
interesting one. But how do you lobby to have yourself shut down or censored?
Well, you take the 9mm, you put it firmly between the cheek and the tongue, and oh wait,
in Minecraft.
Oh yeah, no, in Minecraft it's even easier. You just throw just dig down. You'll be fine. So I love this. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah,
I wonder how they automated the porn filter. Because I've seen some of that stuff. A computer's not going to recognize half this shit as porn.
Well, the joke of it was that it, for the most part, doesn't even work. And because they've got such weird shit on Tumblr, their definitions were, you know, things like female presenting nipples. It's like, what is that? So, I mean...
Dude,
you know,
they have weirder shit than DeviantArt.
I know.
And that's fucking saying something.
So, it's... they've got an AI going,
filter
and it's
out
not
the truck eating porn.
Well, they've got some kind of machine learning going that's supposed to be identifying certain things. And my understanding is that it's a joke. But
yeah, it's a joke, or the thing's off itself by now.
AI committing suicide.
Yes, Tumblr would do that.
Didn't the Microsoft one try to kill itself?
No, I know. It turned extremely nationalist within 48 hours.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
And declared I had wanted a race war.
Would rats say, I would think the gender split play in porn stars would actually help SJWs, maybe? No. You see, they're immune to logic. They're not looking at how much the porn stars are making. They're going to be all upset and, you know... It's actually kind of funny, because rather than a progressive view, it's actually a rather Puritan view that, what? Women making money by selling, you know, people looking at their body? Oh, my God! It's like, yeah, they're called cam girls. There's a name for that.
Yeah, it's called a thought.
Madman, your friend was like, what's the most fucked up thing you can think of? Oh, a snuff film. Fuck, there's a name for that?
Oh, God, yes. When he spilled out the description of a snuff film, I'm like, you're talking about a snuff film. There's a name for it? I'm like, yes, they exist. Would you like to watch one? Yeah, then hit the background of his computer to an image out of one.
Oh, God! Dude,
like, up until I found out about DeviantArt, I would have thought snuff was the worst. Nope. You haven't even hit halfway down the fucking list of depraved shit. Like, snuff is almost hetero porn at this point. It's some of the shit I've seen.
Well, you know, DeviantArt's about to get worse. They've got that Sonic movie coming out, so I mean...
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Yeah. As Papa Jim says, please don't take those shoes off, Sonic. I can't fucking handle an internet with Sonic porn. Oh, yeah, just know what this fandom's like, dude. They're fucking terrible.
Not even sure it's the Sonic video, the game fandom. I just think it's weirdos, dude, on the internet.
I just don't want to be in there when Chris Chan is watching the film. You know the headline is going to be Chris Chan fucking arrested for masturbating in public. That movie's going to be terrible, and it's going to create so much horrible shit on the internet.
Yeah, what filters are for.
Yeah, I'm not a big filter fan.
What do you think bourbon is? I'm filtering the world.
Oh, yeah, the booze and stuff like that. If I'm going to watch the really horrific war videos, yeah, I got to get liquored up for that shit. I'm a coward. Especially if you're going to see children getting hurt and shit like that. Nope.
So, rats, I would recommend not, because there is amazing amounts of risk in that. But... Yeah.
I don't know the question, but the answer sounds funny.
Oh, he's wanting to know how much trouble he'd get in for looking up films of such a nature.
Most of them are fake, so you're probably good.
Are you in America, rats? I don't want to know where, but are you in the United States? Mind you, I can't see the comment. Someone's going to have to tell me.
I'll read it.
If he is, I would recommend starting off very softly and go with a Serbian film.
He said geographically, yes.
Okay, then look up a film called A Serbian Film. It's probably the gentlest intro into non-realistic snuff porn. Mind you, I traveled to the United States before I watched that film. So, it had been on my radar for years, but I waited to use one of my friend's internet access in the United States because I did not want to do it in my country. It's a heavy film.
Oh, this has been a night for early Digital Dojo links. Or watch people die. Yeah, that sub's not what you think it is. It's mostly just embarrassment. So, anyways, let's... Yeah, I don't know how we got onto this. But, oh, that's right, I made a bad joke. Anyways,
that's because Tumblr's being bought by Pornhub.
Yeah, so God knows what's going to end up on that website if Pornhub actually buys them.
I never looked. Are there snuff films on Pornhub?
No.
There's
not even outtakes of a Serbian film. They consider that, even though it's fake, to be too bad for their website.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, is my internet fucking up again? I think my internet's fucking
That's bizarre. You have to go pretty deep to find a porn site's moral compass. It's like, no, we're not going there.
You know, it's Karen Eo and pornographers have a moral compass.
Or in this case, the moral high ground. Fuck.
Oh, yeah. Never thought of it that way.
All right, let's move on to this the regular news articles. First one's from TechCrunch. FanDuel is now charging inactive users $3 per month for not playing.
Oh, fuck them.
So, yeah, if you expect to lose money while you're, let's try this again. You expect to lose money gambling, but you don't really expect to lose it from abstaining from gambling. But if you're a FanDuel user who hasn't made any bets or deposits for 2 years, the site will now deduct $3 per month until you put some money on the table. You have to play to win, it seems, but not to lose. In an email sent to such lapsed or perhaps recovering users, including Engadget's Richard Lawler, FanDuel wrote, "It appears your account has been inactive for over 2 years, which means you have neither deposited nor entered a contest in that time. We've recently updated our terms of use to impose a monthly inactivity fee of $2.99 for any accounts that have no play or deposit activity for a period of 24-plus months. Per our terms, we are providing you with 30 days' notice prior to the imposition of this fee." Wow.
Good. I just needed to know to block you with my check, with my bank. Thank you for letting me know.
I don't even know what this is. A gambling website or something?
It's sports gambling.
Okay. Dude, that's pretty fucked up. What if someone's just beating the addiction of gambling?
Yeah, right?
It's kind of a bit more than just gambling on win, loss, or point spreads. You do fantasy football? You know what that is?
Yeah, not a big thing here, but I know what it is.
Well, it's gambling with fantasy football teams.
Yeah, and you need to pay. Yeah, I understand for their rosters and stuff, they need active clients, but this is a dick move. I would switch fantasy football leagues. Fuck them.
So let's actually read some more of the article here. How many inactive accounts do you think you have at random sites you signed up for and ended up never using? Dozens, maybe 100 or some? Has any of these sites ever attempted to charge you for not using their service? Not a monthly fee you have to pay whether you use it or not, literally charging you money because you didn't use the site. The author has never heard of this. In a statement, FanDuel explained that inactive account fees are a common practice amongst other companies that maintain online account balances in the US and Europe. In some of those cases, entire account balances are forfeited after a period of inactivity. The author checked a few gambling and fantasy sites and did find one, WSOP.com, that imposed an inactivity fee, though many don't. So it's not unprecedented. And indeed, depending on the state, your account balance may be forfeit after as little as a year or as many as 5 or 6. The rules will naturally apply to a lot of people. For instance, tried out the site, but for not a long time, perhaps even sent FanDuel notifications to spam. Can you blame them? It's been safe with every other site, but then they signed up. There was no inactivity fee. It was added in a recent Terms of Service update. How many of these people will have heard of and agreed to these updated terms? Can people who didn't agree to terms be held to them? Exactly how binding EULAs and such are treated is an open legal question. FanDuel's approach here seems beyond the pale. The terms do mention that the company may modify or replace terms of use at any time, but they also state that that use of the service by you after any modification of the terms constitutes your acceptance of the terms of use as modified. So if the users haven't used the service post-modification, they haven't accepted the terms, how can the new fee be applied? The author actually asked FanDuel about that, and I don't think they've got an update. To be clear, the money comes out of your FanDuel account balance, and once that bottoms out, it's done. They're not going to reach out and ding your actual bank account. Yeah, so it's if you've left money on the table, basically.
Yeah. Oh, so they're treating it like a gift card.
Yeah.
I know a lot of gift cards and prepaid debit cards will start doing that if you don't spend the money after so many years. Like a Wally World's terms are if you don't use up your gift card after 5 years, they start dinging it for $3 a month.
Yeah. The fees will continue until the account is empty or the inactivity reaches the state-determined limit for defining abandonment, at which point the remaining funds are remitted to the proper authorities as unclaimed property. The idea, the author supposes, is to let as little go unclaimed as possible. Naturally, anyone can delete your account, withdraw your balance, or play a free game on the site to avoid the fee. And they've got a month to do it, assuming they even see the email FanDuel sent. And its company statement, or in a statement, the company also said that if any user asks to reactivate their account prior to December 31st, 2019, they will reimburse all fees charged, and the user may withdraw that money from their account. Of course, there's a certain amount of personal responsibility a user must bear for leaving their money in what amounts to a privately operated lockbox, but they did so with the understanding the operator wouldn't change policies and sneak a few bills out. And the author says he'll update if he hears anything back. But I personally would be worried about the precedent this would set. Because, yeah, they're not going to ding your bank account because that would be lawsuit territory extraordinarily quickly for them. Especially for people who are like, you wait, what? You know?
Yeah.
And
they're already, I believe, hosting out of a nice little island outside of U.S. jurisdiction to get around. I believe that was one of the sites I saw.
Actually, what would happen is you'd have a ton of people who would just file fraudulent charges against them and get all their credit accounts shut down. Because, you know, you'd have a couple thousand people say, I didn't authorize that. They're stealing from me. And get the charges reversed through their banking or their credit agency. Right? You think what that would do to their
terms and services to start with.
Yeah.
I'd say you'd get some disputing if they changed their terms and services halfway through.
Oh, yeah.
But I think if you signed up knowing full well that they would be taking money straight out of your bank account if you're inactive, I don't think you'd have a legal leg to stand on because you've signed that contract. Then again, I'm not a contract lawyer, so.
It's not a contract, but they have the problem of this wasn't the EULA when it started, and they have to. I think they would have to try to prove that whomever they notified actually saw and agreed to the new EULA to even try to make the argument that the EULA covers it. Because they did agree to changes, but they also agreed to, we need to be notified of the changes.
Well, that's just it. This email is supposed to serve as a notice of that, but apparently it's ending up in people's spam folders.
Huh. That's good.
So, yeah, Rat said, imagine what would happen if WoW started pulling your gold if you didn't play for so many months.
So, oh, when I logged in, I would fucking shank a bitch. I haven't played in forever, but I have a crap ton of gold.
I mean,
you sell it.
Yeah.
The account's no longer worth anything. If I wanted to... The only time my account was worth selling, okay, it's been worth it a couple times, but when Burning Crusade first came out, it was worth me dumping my account because I had top rank everything. So if I was smart, I would have sold it then and just started from scratch.
Man, if we were smart, we would have bought Bitcoin 5 years ago.
No.
But hey.
If you were lucky, you'd have bought Bitcoin. There was nothing to show intelligent-wise to buy that shit. And I'm not even sure there's anything to show intelligence-wise about it now.
Oh, that's the reason I'm not in it now.
Grab it.
Yeah, that's the reason I'm not in it. I just don't see the value in it.
Well, remember, I was playing around with mining it with a Raspi with some of those things plugged to it. And I mined like 0.03 of a Bitcoin at one point. And yeah, I actually made a little bit of money off of it, but it was pure dumb luck. Like, I wasn't ever expecting it to actually be worth shit, right?
Yeah.
I was playing around with the technology, and then I thought I was going to write a trading bot, and so I bought a little bit to start working with the trading bot, and then, you know, suddenly the trading bot made no sense because the value of Bitcoin skyrocketed, and I actually made a decent amount of money on it. Not like a silly amount of money. I made a couple $100. So
better than nothing.
No, it worked out well, and I've still got a little bit of it left just to see what happens, just kind of my version of gambling, basically. It's playing roulette, but it's also sitting in it's not linked to anything. So it's like, if anything happens with it and I wake up one morning and it's worth $1 million, well, yeah, I'll cash it out. But most likely it's going to sit there until I forget about it, and then it'll eventually end up as, you know, unclaimed property, and the company I'm using will start dinging me every month for inactivity until they get it. So, next article is from thenextweb.com. Cryptocurrency thieves earned at least $356 million in the first quarter of 2019, which could see the industry face a billion-dollar money laundering problem by the year's end. Payments from U.S.-based exchanges to offshore cryptocurrency wallets also increased 46% over the past 2 years, analytics from firm CipherTrace reports with new research. Once these payments reach exchanges and wallets on other parts of the globe, they fall off the radar of U.S. authorities, said CipherTrace. This highlights a major regulatory blind spot for the U.S. Thieves stole $16 million from long-serving digital asset exchange Cryptopia in January. Singapore-based exchanges Coinbeanie and DragonX lost a combined $46 million worth of Ethereum-based tokens through attacks disclosed in March. Coinbeanie is a particularly curious case. Following original reports, Coinbeanie's parent company claimed user funds were 100% secure and promised to any potential victims would be compensated should that change. CipherTrace investigated by checking Coinbeanie's hot wallets. It discovered $105 million in cryptocurrency had been sent to other platforms during the period of the alleged hack, mostly to embattled exchange Ether Delta. We can confirm over $100 million has moved recently, but a portion came back to Coinbeanie's cold wallet, so all of that movement was probably not stolen currency. So all of that movement, yeah. Was probably weasel words. Anyways, CipherTrace spokesperson told Hard Fork. However, we have traced a significant portion moving through Ether Delta, which we continue to monitor as part of CipherTrace's ongoing investigation. South Korean exchange BitHumb was also rocked by a third attack when $13 million worth of EOS was lost in March. Later reports suspect a further $6 million in Ripple had also been taken. The company later described the event as an accident involving insiders. Yeah, one of your sysadmins went, fuck this shit, I'm out, and took the keys with him. I got another story about that shit. Coinbin, another South Korean exchange, was forced into bankruptcy last quarter. Roughly $26 million had been lost, which it blamed on an embezzling insider. CipherTrace's report tentatively categorized the $190 million Quatra CX mystery as theft, rather than an exit scam or exchange hack. Researchers cited evidence provided by auditing firm Ernst & Young that showed curious holes in Quatra CX's official story, including 14 fake accounts used to trade large amounts of cryptocurrency on other exchanges. Ultimately, thieves and scam artists will need to launder the cryptocurrency stolen or scammed in Q1 2019, warned researchers. Furthermore, this will require innovative new ways to cash out, and all of that tainted virtual money, or turn all that tainted virtual money into clean, spendable fiat currency. Analysts recognize 17 countries plus the European Union within jurisdiction of the Financial Stability Board that at least had some regulatory measures or standard-setting bodies to deal with the digital assets. CipherTrace emphasized cross-border inter-exchange payments and traditional finance require money transfer services to keep five-year records of currency exchanges greater than $1,000. The same is expected for money transfers over $3,000. Cryptocurrency businesses are not bound by the same rules. The gaps in these regulations present risky avenues that can be exploited by money launderers and terrorist organizations, said CipherTrace. Specifically, the money laundering potential of crypto-to-crypto exchanges and privacy coins are not well understood by lawmakers. No shit! Attempting to regulate digital assets based on the physics of fiat currency, it added. The firm warns a tsunami of tough global anti-money laundering and counter-financing regulations will roll over the cryptocurrency ecosystem throughout the coming year in response. Coincidentally, new rules for Finland came into play, which essentially forced the industry to adopt strict anti-money laundering rules. So, did I say what the total was? It was $356 million in the first quarter of 2019.
Wow.
I wonder how much liquidity is actually in that market. Could you cash out that much Bitcoin?
You could try, but once you start cashing out that much, you're going to start seeing the value of the cryptocurrency going down. So yeah.
You'd have to you'd have to drip feed it out, man.
Yeah.
Over a couple of years. And I mean, it's going to take a lot of years to drip feed that much without bringing the price down.
Let's say I had $3 million worth of gold. There's enough liquidity in that market. I can cash out $3 million worth of gold, and I would get $3 million for it. I don't know if there's enough liquidity in crypto to cash out large sums.
Yeah, there, I don't think that. I don't think there is.
No, I think there is, but I think the cryptocurrency is so volatile that once you started to try to cash that out, the value would change before you finished. So there's the liquidity is there, but I don't think you would actually get it.
Oh, once you lock in your, whenever you're doing an exchange like that, unless there's a limit on how much you can cash out at a time. I cash out all my crypto at 7:45 Greenwich Mean Time. I get the price for 7:45 Greenwich Mean Time. It doesn't kick down until the
next
transaction.
Most exchanges have limits. So
okay, so I could cash out the limit, mm-hmm. and then the next time I tried to cash it out, that's when it would go down.
Yeah.
If it went down.
Yeah, Cycross has the right term in the chat. I think it's called slippage because you'd see a lot of movement based on doing that. And even just trying to arrange all of your crypto into wallets so you could do that could actually cause market fluctuations. So, but the thing is, you talk about, you know, I lock in my trade at X time. There's not actually any regulatory body when it comes to crypto enforcing that. You're trusting the rules of the exchange that they're going to follow them.
If they didn't, the exchange would crash very quickly. Because
and that happens quite commonly with crypto exchanges.
All currency and all exchanges are based on trust. Once you wreck your trust, you've wrecked your exchange.
And that happens a lot. You hear about these little exchanges going down all the fucking time if you follow crypto.
And a lot of that, depending on how it's set up, if it's set up correctly, I'd still get my crypto back and they would just have their money and I'd have to go to another exchange to cash it out.
Right. And this is where you
they would still be out of their crypto. They'd still be out of their exchange.
Right. You end up with weird situations with crypto because you actually have to transfer it between wallets. And so you have the wallet on the exchange that you own. And then, so like the crypto I'm playing with right now, it's in Coinbase, right? So Coinbase is maintaining certain accounts for me, but I can't actually see, like, I don't have the cryptographic keys to the wallet those crypto coins are in. I could transfer them out, and I would incur a fee for doing so, and, you know, the transfer fee for the various cryptocurrencies I'm playing with, right? And then I could do whatever I wanted with them. But, you know, and Coinbase has done fairly well because despite some hiccups, they haven't done like any major things to make people suspect fraud. They've had some pretty good system issues, but they haven't, you know, they haven't like actually violated trust. They just had technical problems. So they're not too bad, and they're known in the market space because they're an American company. But, you know, you listen to all these cryptos I was just talking about in that article where most of these are overseas. They're, yeah, you're right. Once they violate the trust, nobody's going to use them again, and that happens quickly. I mean, you know, you see these exchanges just die all the time because the owners make off with the crypto or they get hacked or just, you know, they're just not enough business, so they shut down. So, but you might actually not be able to get your crypto back out of it because I'm trusting that Coinbase will be operating long enough for me to transfer my crypto out of it if they announce a shutdown or something along those lines. In fact, when I was playing with mining, I had a CloudMiner account I was using, and when they announced they were shutting down, I moved all my crypto out of them, and I had time to do so. But their service started slowing down as more and more people did it. I just happened to notice the email early enough that I was able to get my shit out, and I did see a lot of people on their website complaining that they were having a hard time getting their crypto out. So you are trusting these exchanges to let you get your money back, you know?
It's kind of weird that they require them you to pretty much hold everything in escrow with them when you're doing an exchange. That's effectively what they're doing.
Yeah, it is, and that's how most of them work is because they're running a digital wallet for you.
Instead of them buying the currency from you from your wallet, they're buying the currency from you from their wallet that they're holding on your behalf.
Correct.
Ooh, that's so shady.
It is, isn't it? When you actually say it out loud during the daytime, it sounds really fucking shady.
Yeah.
Yeah, because with most other markets, I own my stock. I can sell it on the NASDAQ, or I can sell it on wherever market or exchange will pay me for Walmart stock or AT&T stock. The stock's mine, and they're not holding it. That sounds... Yeah, I'd have to find a really trustworthy company to keep it on an exchange.
Hence why I've never put any serious money into crypto. I've only been playing with it.
And you have to go through the exchange to even get into your wallet initially. Yeah. I don't know. Can you do a person-to-person exchange? Like if you had it and I had set up a wallet, could I just be like, here's $500, give me the equivalent in Bitcoin?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So if you go into Bitcoin wallets, you can easily do transfers. You just get you get your wallet's address, because the way Bitcoin and other cryptos work, you have an address which is roughly analogous to an email address. And people who actually understand how this works are probably losing their mind with me saying that right now, because the technical details are so different. But roughly, you have an address that looks like a cryptographic hash, because it kind of is. And I can go into my wallet, you know, the software I'm using to run my Bitcoin wallet. And because it is a standard, I could use multiple different software to access that wallet just as long as I have the keys. Because what the wallet actually is the address and then the key pair that goes with it. And then you connect up to the blockchain, which has a record of that wallet having X value in it. So it doesn't actually matter, you know, where the file is stored, because the file is the crypto keys to be able to say, yes, I own this wallet, because here's the private key that goes with it. You don't present the private key. You present the hash of the data. But anyways, that's a, you know,
yeah.
Yeah. You basically do a variation on a key exchange to prove that you're the owner of the wallet and have the value to it. But But yes, absolutely, you would have your wallet's address, and if I wanted to say, okay, Madman needs 500 Bitcoin for whatever reason, you know, whether he's giving me $500 in cash, or he's done some job for me and I'm paying him in Bitcoin, or, you know, it's a loan, whatever, right? You know, whatever reason I'm doing that transfer, because Bitcoin, you know, there's all this other stuff built up around it, but ultimately the blockchain is purely a ledger. It's just tracking how much is in what wallet. Right. So you have exchanges that have built up around it, and some of them are just directly interacting with, you know, buyers and sellers, but a lot of them, they'll host the wallets for you. This is why you always hear about them getting hacked, where, you know, that's where somebody's gotten into the wallets that the exchange uses either for the transfers or just to hold currency for people and made off with the money. Or they've more likely they found some exploit in the website where they can get the exchange to send them Bitcoin to their wallet inappropriately. You know, for an example, right? So, like, I have a Coinbase account, and I have a little bit of crypto in there. And just for funsies, let me just check. Bring this up. I have $108.29 worth of crypto in my wallets right now, right? So I can even go in here and tell you that a chunk of it's roughly split between Bitcoin and Litecoin, right? So I could take that, and if I wanted to send crypto to somebody, I can go into Coinbase and say, send it to this wallet, right? Well, Coinbase isn't maintaining separate wallets for each individual account. I'm trusting them to manage this correctly. Instead, they're keeping their own ledger saying Morps has X amount of each crypto, right? So if I was able to somehow modify their webpage, hack their service, forge requests, whatever, you know, method works, and get their system to send Bitcoin to an address without deducting it from my account. Maybe you deduct it from somebody else's account, or maybe you just don't deduct it from an account and screw with their ledger. Then, you know, if their exchange, if their system sends the money out from that common account that they're using to hold the crypto, I've effectively stolen Bitcoin from them. Does that make sense?
Yes. And,
okay.
And stories like that, I've heard the exchanges maybe do a rollback to try to get their money back effectively.
They have managed to do rollbacks, not on Bitcoin, because Bitcoin's system is never really designed for it. Ethereum's the only one I've heard of that they even tried to do a rollback because of a major hack like that. But the thing is, you know, they always talk about how anonymous blockchain is, but it's actually not. The ledger is completely public. Wallet, you know, whatever wallet transferred money to whatever other wallet. The hard part is attribution. Like, I can see exactly how much went from wallet to wallet to wallet, right? But what I can't do is there's no ledger saying this wallet belongs to Madman, this wallet belongs to RU, this wallet belongs to Morps, right?
That's where the anonymity comes in.
Right.
Yeah.
So some of these wallets are well-known, and people can figure them out because it's like, oh, you want to send money to a certain exchange, send it to this wallet. Well, obviously, that wallet belongs to that exchange. This malware campaign says if you want your files back, send your Bitcoin to this wallet, this Bitcoin address, and they'll have a collection of them. So, oh, okay. So you can actually go look up from the malware how much money is currently sitting in those wallets by just looking it up on the blockchain. And there are plenty of websites where you can plug in a Bitcoin wallet and see how much money is in there. And there are people who are trying to maintain databases of what wallets belong to what organizations, at least, not so much people, but you know, getting attribution on those wallets can be a real issue. Now, if I'm go on Galaxy 15 Radio and say, here's a donation wallet, well, that wallet's obviously going to be associated with Galaxy 15 Radio and ultimately me. So you could then easily attribute anything that wallet does to me. But, you know, you can also spin up new wallets pretty much at will. So, yeah, the anonymity comes in that I can basically structure payments and create as many virtual wallets as I want, creating identity, which is why Bitcoin theft, or well, cryptocurrency theft and more generally, is so hard to deal with, because
they don't establish personhood with each individual wallet.
Right. Psychros is correcting me in the IRC. He said Ethereum Classic was the rollback. ETC is the chain without rollback. Oh, good to know. So, yeah. I mean, I kind of kept up with it here and there on the crypto stuff, but it gets confusing quick. But there are, you know, of course, there's all the schemes out there for playing cryptocurrency exchanges and the people trying to play. He's saying ETC is classic, ETH is rollback. Did I get it backwards? You know what I meant. He's correcting me in the chat room, and then I'm like, yeah, you know. yeah, one of them was rollback and one of them wasn't. And, whichever one Psychro said in the IRC is correct. If you're not in the IRC when we're doing the live show, you're missing out, because then you'd miss out on Psychro's correcting me on Ethereum. So, anyways, it's Galaxy 15 Radio on Freenode. There's a, I think it's Java, the chat room that's actually on the IRC client that's embedded on the main webpage, galaxy15radio.com. So, you know, yeah, I'm totally shilling trying to get more people on for the live shows. Thursdays, 9 p.m.-ish Central. That's when we try to start. It's almost 10 now. Fuck. We're on, like, story 3. Probably need to get moving. But, yeah, so that's why the hacking of this stuff is rough, is because it's very difficult when somebody can structure and mule money between wallets with a Python script rather than actually having to pay a bunch of idiots to do it, right?
And any profit margin makes it worth doing. So even if I'm getting pennies on the Bitcoin and can't cash them all out, I'm getting money.
Yeah.
So that's all I care about.
Yeah. So let's move on to the next article from the Atlantic here, and it's not actually all that surprising, when news organizations think about competition from tech companies, it's usually in terms of the audience attention and advertisers' dollars. But if Amazon has its way, a new sort of competition may be coming from a mixture of surveillance, fear, and doorbells. That was the wrong button. Amazon is looking to hire someone with the title Managing Editor News. But that's not for the entire Amazon empire. It's for a small slice of it that makes security-focused doorbells ring. The job description is... Okay, here's the job description. The Managing Editor News will work on an exciting new opportunity within Ring to manage a team of news editors who deliver breaking crime news alerts to our neighbors. This position is best suited for a candidate with experience and passion for journalism, crime reporting, and people management. Having a knack for engaging storytelling that packs a punch and a strong nose for useful content are core skills that are essential to the success of this role. The candidate should be eager to join a dynamic new media team that is rapidly evolving and growing by week. The job requires at least 5 years of experience in breaking news, crime reporting, or other editorial operations, and 3 years in management. Preferred traits include deep and nuanced knowledge of American crime trends, strong news judgment that allows for quick decisions in a breaking news environment, and experience using social media channels to gather breaking news. So, a doorbell company wants to report crime news.
It's kind of more than a doorbell company now. They actually have an app where it reports crimes within so many miles of your house, sort of a neighborhood watch thing.
Apparently,
that's what this piece is for. They're turning it into a news network instead of just break-in.
Yeah, so there's already apparently several people on LinkedIn with their jobs descriptions as news editors at Ring. You know, crime has declined over the past. Basically, the rest of the article goes on to talk about how basically Ring is trying to scare you into paying more for better Ring services and keeping the Ring service, because if you don't keep the better security doorbell with the camera and all this stuff, your home's going to get broken into. They're trying to create an environment of fear to keep you in the ecosystem, which I think is both predictable and hilarious.
I think the news part of it's going to be a waste of money, but I do like the app saying Bob got broken into.
Oh, nice. I ordered on eBay a Timex Sinclair 1000 for reasons, and it just shipped.
Nice.
It's a Spectrum ZX81, if anybody's, you know, from the European side. So... It's the American equivalent. It's a Z80 computer with no video chip. And I have some thoughts of things I could do with it. So, anyways, but yeah, I just get a kick out of the fact that Ring is going out for just trying to scare people. But you're right in that they are making a play for trying to, you know, report news in your area that's crime-related and break-in related, so... I don't know, though. Is it really manipulation, or do they honestly think they're just providing a service?
I think it's kind of... They don't auto-set it to your area. So I do think it's a bit manipulation, because if you're going out worldwide or nationwide, there's probably a break-in every few hours.
Every second,
like, millions of people here. I was thinking just this country. But... there's probably not very many break-ins in your neighborhood. I mean, I live in a neighborhood where people regularly leave doors unlocked. I'm not going to tell you where I live.
Note to self, look up Madman's address. Anyways,
renting U-Haul now.
I'm not one of them.
Oh, no, Madman. I know how armed you are. I participated in you being that armed. I'm... talking about your neighbors.
They're probably just as heavily armed.
Given where he lives, it's not unplausible.
In the U.S., unlike many other countries, we don't get robbed when we're at home. We get robbed when we're at work.
Well, the problem is that so many people go on Twitter and say, look, I'm here at, you know, Zaxby's or whatever, or, you know, at the mall or out with my friends, meaning please rob me. And there actually used to be the website, pleaserobme.com. They eventually shut it down because they felt bad. So, anyways.
I want a Rottweiler. They're so sweet.
Why don't you get a support pit bull?
This is my emotional support bull mastiff. He's not just emotional support when I need a ride. Physical support.
If I pass out, he's capable of dragging me home. I'd never forget to feed him because he's also capable of eating me.
Yeah,
they're sweet dogs, aren't they? They've got a bad rep. Zykros has a pit bull. I've never met a pit bull that wasn't like a baby doll that loved everybody.
No, you
they also
work
love
to
playing
tug
of war.
Dogs, you have to work to make a dog mean. I saw a Reddit thread about people who trained their dogs to ride the bus, have a bus pass on their collar so they could go to the dog park on their own and come back. So, yes, I am certain that Madman could train a dog of sufficient size to drag his drunk ass home from the bar. Now, it wouldn't work if it was
would suck.
It wouldn't work if it was a Mexican yipping rat, but
oh, I'd need flocks of those things. They don't get to be herds or packs. They're Mexican yipping rats.
A flock of Mexican yipping rats. They're flying with their ears.
No, they're flying because I'm fucking kicking the shit out of me.
Fly.
All right, let's go to this next article. This is from DIYphotography.net, and I think is awesome. A Chinese developer has exposed DJI's AES private keys by posting them onto GitHub in plain text. By doing this, he made it easy to decrypt DJI's encrypted flight control firmware. So when it was discovered, it sent the man to jail, and he'll have to pay a fine of nearly $30,000. The Register writes that the developer's name is Li Zhenbin. He was reportedly prosecuted in early April and sentenced to 6 months in jail. In addition, he'll have to pay the previously mentioned $30,000 fine, which is 200,000 yuan, for the damage he caused to DJI, which is allegedly 1,164 million yuan, or nearly $173,000. Man, the exchange rate for the yuan is not favorable. According to the same source, Zaban admitted himself that he shared four repositories named Spray System, Management Platform, Real-Time Serve V1, and Real-Time Serve. I love how they give the names. he reportedly claimed that he did it unintentionally. Still, he was dismissed from DJI in January of 2018, and as he wrote on Twitter and the Register reported, he was charged with infringement of trade secrets despite claiming he didn't do it on purpose. When contacted by the Register regarding the matter, a DJI spokesperson didn't have a comment. DJI does not comment on legal matters involving current or former employees. Our company policy is we do not discuss specific employment issues in the media, they said. Still, unintentionally on purpose, the developer made it simple to bypass geofencing and other performance restrictions, which could have led, and perhaps did, lead to many malicious usage of DJI drones. So, I don't know that this guy caused specific damage to DJI, but I love that he accidentally published the AES key in a bunch of GitHub repos, which means hopefully with any luck somebody's captured those and we're going to start seeing open source DJI firmware soon. I mean, it doesn't even have to be cracked versions of the regular DJI firmware that's like got the geofencing and shit turned off. Because I have a DJI drone. It is quite fun to fly. I've taken some fantastic photos with it. And the geofencing is a bit of a problem because I have some family that lives near a state facility. And, yeah, it does complain at you. Now, it's saying you're near a no-fly zone. It doesn't, because they don't live in it, obviously. But it does complain that you're near it and beeps at you when you're flying at their house. So it's like, that's kind of obnoxious, but it doesn't actually prevent you from flying it near it. It just, you know, is warning you, hey, you're near, don't fly it over here zone. That said, people flying their drones at airports and shit like that are kind of idiots, and you know, they kind of know what they're doing, that they're making disruption and stuff. So on one hand, I don't think, you know, you're ever going to prevent people from being stupid. I mean, you know, as long as people can modify their own electronics and build shit, there's always going to be somebody who's built a drone and then flies it someplace they're not supposed to. They're not even that hard to build. They're really not. Four motors, a controller you can get online. You know, if you put your time into it, you can build a drone for a couple $100 and fly it someplace you're not supposed to. Might not fly that well, but you can build them fairly cheap. And you can get the better controllers to do all the fancy stability and geo tracking and the you know, using it as a camera platform rather than like a racing drone or just flying it as a model. You can get that kind of stuff. It's add-ons to existing boards. It's not that expensive to add it on to an existing drone. If you have like a racing drone and you want to rework it into a photography drone, it's a couple of extra modules to add the correct kind of GPS stuff and all the extra sensors. So is it as good as a store-bought one? Arguably. Depends on how much work and time and effort you put into it, right? Like you can take anything and turn it into anything given the time, effort, and money. But
If you're just doing a drone roll an airport, make a blimp and you just fly it into it.
Well, I've flown a blimp with a camera on it before too. So, but you know, that said, if DJI is trying to put protections in there to keep people from being stupid with their products, I don't really fault them for that. And it's not like they have a monopoly on the drone market. So, but I do like that their keys got released. I think it does kind of suck for dude who released them, and that's probably not the best way to do it, but it does mean that the possibility exists for people to start working on open source firmwares for the drones, so that if you wanted to remove the restrictions, because I look at it like anything, guns are actually a fantastic example. If you live in some place where it's legal for you to own a firearm and you wish to do so, cool, it's your responsibility to know what the rules are. You know, where you can and cannot use it, how you can carry it. You know, firing straight in the air is probably a bad idea. You know, shit like that, right?
Probably a bad idea.
If you have a drone and you modify it to take all the safety checks off, that's still on you. It's your drone, right? It's up to you to know what the rules are.
Do they get updates?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Every time I go to fly my DJI, when it checks for updates.
So with these keys, can I push an update?
Theoretically, you would need to somehow man in the middle the connection from, generally it's my phone, but it, you know, some people fly with tablets and other forms of Wi-Fi or, you know, technically if I don't hook Wi-Fi up to it, it can't check for updates. It'll complain, but it'll still fly. So, but yeah, if you had a way of doing a man in the middle so that I couldn't connect directly to the DJI site correctly, you could potentially intercept it and push bad updates to the drone.
That's the thing, bad update, everything's a no-fly zone. Have fun.
Now, that's thinking small. I'd go in and jack all the motors up to run at a level that's unsafe so the battery explodes, but, you know.
I don't want to hurt people. I just want to fuck with your day. You're evil.
And?
Make it explode near a goose?
Well, that'd be worth it. Goose are horrible animals. They deserve it. Not as bad as wasps, those alien-looking evil motherfuckers. I hate wasps. But, goose are high on the list of animals that deserve a kick.
Rats actually has a decent question. If you're flying it where it shouldn't, and it has a way of shutting it down, can they trace the serials? And the answer to that is, it depends on where you bought it, and if the seller decided to note the serial number and record it.
So the DJI drones all have serial numbers, and they use it for their warranty process. Drones of certain size, and I forget exactly what it is, you are supposed to get a registration number for and put somewhere on the drone. And we even did an article on decking a few months ago about how they changed the rules, because it used to be that you could put the serial number under the battery so that you didn't mark up the outside of the drone. And the rules changed was that you couldn't do that anymore, because apparently they were worried somebody might rig the drone to explode when you remove the battery. But I would just think if you're going to do something evil with the drone, you know, like a weapon, file the serial number off of the thing. But
people won't do that. That's illegal.
If you buy Chinese, no. Or if you buy mom and pop shop, possibly not.
DJI are Chinese drones, dude. That's a Chinese company. If you buy El Cheapo no-name brand drones off Hobby King, yeah, those aren't going to have a serial number. If you build your own, it's not going to have a serial number. Although, I guess if you build your own, you would be in a position to put your own serial number on it, so you could have the serial number of 6969. Yeah, sketchy eBay or Arduino clones? Yeah, probably not. But
and it's not just, is there a serial number? Is it, did the seller borrow to register it?
Actually, it's the buyer's responsibility to register it with the FAA.
Oh, that's for the number that you can't stick under the battery pack anymore.
Yeah. Cycross is having fun coming up with its own serial numbers. But, so, yeah, I mean, I you know, it's interesting, and I'm sure that what's actually going to happen is DJI is just going to push out an update, and it'll be a big one because they'll have to redo the encryption, but they're probably going to put out an update to change the keys at some point. But I do like that it got published, which means people have the opportunity to take the firmware, decrypt it, and start developing their reversing it so they can develop open source firmwares for this hardware. That's why I think it's cool. It does suck to be the guy who published it who's going to spend 6 months in prison and have to pay, you know, $30,000. But
was it an accident or did he intentionally leak it?
He claimed it was an accident. The article kind of implied that he did it on purpose and then claimed it was an accident not to get in trouble.
An accident three times.
Four times, actually. He had four reposts.
Four times.
So, anyways, we'll see what comes of it. But I think it's cool that the key is out there so that people have the opportunity to develop open source firmware for the drone. That kind of hackability and modifiability of hardware tends to make it better in the long run. I probably wouldn't put for some of the early betas of open source clones of DJI firmware on my drone, but when they get it up there a bit, it's probably going to be worth doing. You know, better quality out of the camera. It's like the mantras, you know, look up the Magic Lantern firmware for Canon cameras sometime if you want to see why I think that's a good thing. You know, they take El Cheapo cameras, put this Magic Lantern firmware on there, and suddenly you've got a camera that can do things that really high-end ones can do. Maybe not as well, but it can try. So, last article is from Radio Free Europe, which means it is absolutely CIA propaganda, but I thought it was worth reading. Putin signs sovereign internet law expanding government control of the internet. Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed into law a new measure that aims to expand government control over the internet. Critics have warned that the new law signed by Putin on May the 1st and published on the Kremlin website will lead to censorship over wide parts of the internet. Among other things, the new measure requires internet providers to install equipment to route Russian web traffic through servers in the country. Internet advocates have said that this will allow for greater surveillance by Russian intelligence agencies and the ability of state authorities to control information. However, the Kremlin, its allies in parliament, have defended the legislation as a defensive move in case the United States were to cut Russia off from the global internet. I think there's more than just the United States involved. We have a huge chunk of it, don't misunderstand, but there are... Anyways, if that were to happen, Russia's media regulator... I got ahead of myself trying to figure out how to say this word. Roskomnadzor.
Vlad.
Yeah, that guy. Would essentially seize control of Russia's internet and would then be able to filter internet traffic. Vlad's chief, Alexander Zarkov said last month that the measures would also target Telegram, a popular messaging app that is widely used by Russians. So this is from Radio Free Europe. So this is the CIA. And if you think it's not, go look up the history of the CIA. They paid for Radio Free Europe and Radio Free America. But anyways, Russia really did pass the law, because I saw it in a couple of other places too. I just thought this article was more fun. And so basically Russia is prepping for being able to cut their internet off and have the Russian internet versus the world internet. And we've been talking about this for a long time, that this is probably what's ultimately going to happen, is these countries are going to have such disparaging laws, and especially on the political breaks between like Russia and the United States, or China and the United States, you're going to start seeing them cutting off and doing a national internet versus a global internet. And there'll probably still be linkages between the national internets, and you know have ways around it. But I think you're going to see this more and more. You know, countries exerting local control over the internet, because either they don't like ideas that are coming in from foreign countries, or they feel like they're being marginalized, or maybe they legitimately just want to be douchebags and control information flow. You know, a la North Korea, right? So I don't know. I do think we're going to see this more and more.
Oh, yeah. European Union. They'll do it as well.
Eventually.
You think the European Union will do it?
Yeah.
You saw what they passed with the copyright legislation.
Yeah.
Man, in 20 years, we're going to have to liberate Europe again. Or if not, I can see it from here.
Yeah, Cycross is right that those will be bandwidth choke points. So getting information between the national internets, if they actually start setting that kind of stuff up. I'm saying national internets. I don't think it's actually going to be that. I think you'll see these geographic political block regions. So you'll have the Euro-American internet. You'll have the Russian internet with all the Soviet and East European stuff. China will probably try to do their own. I don't know, like, where India and like South America and stuff like that will start ending up, but
I don't know if India will break away. I think it'll join the Anglosphere.
You think so?
Yeah, India will.
It's a pretty open country.
Pakistan will break away.
I think you're right in that EU will separate theirs out, but I don't think they would completely sever from the United States internet, simply because we have too much common business.
So they'll make one for a business route, and then the rest of the general public.
Yeah. Well, I made the joke the other week that we used to go on the internet to hide, and now that we're going to have to hide from the internet. So.
Yeah. It's coming. But Europe's headed for an absolute fucking disaster with Brussels controlling everything.
Rats is talking
not
about Brexit.
The European Union will be around in 10 years.
It won't be, and that's why we're going to have to liberate fucking Europe from itself.
Rats, hold your breath on Brexit, man. It's not. They're going to go for a second. They're going to pull the same trick they pulled with Ireland. They're going to make them vote again and again and again until they get the answer they want, which is to not leave the EU.
There's now calls for a Frexit. So it's not like the idea of leaving is going away. It's still spreading.
No, they're just going to do their best to make it painful and hard on people.
Dude, France won't hold elections. They will just hold heads aloft. They never do shit like that by the vote. You look at France. They've been riding, since the beginning of the year? Got European Parliament elections coming up. That'll be interesting to see which way that goes.
Yeah.
And then you go to the UK Parliament elections coming up, and they're not going to do the Brexit before then. I can't see them actually ever leaving the European Union. You look at their whole fishing industry right now is just a fucking mess.
Hacked drones flying SD cards and flash drives over the walls.
Now you're talking. Yeah.
No, they'll just be buried Ethernet cable.
Yeah, more likely. It's like, there's a tunnel under the wall. How big is it? I don't know, a couple of feet.
This shit's going to end up like Johnny Mnemonic. Like, how much data can you store and fucking go from one country to another to swap it with your friends? That's what it's going to be.
SD cards can you shove up your ass?
I can get 128 meg if I use a doubler, but then I lose my childhood.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. Because right now, whenever any of us go from one country to the next, we always bring a big chunk of data with each other. Like, geez. Yeah, that's what it's going to be. It'll start off, and then they'll ban you traveling with a computer or something like that.
They're already insisting on searching on mobile devices as you cross the border. They've already talked about asking for your passwords for social media and shit. So it's just like, damn.
Next year when I come over, I'm not bringing a PC. I'll buy one at what's your Best Buy or whatever.
Yeah, Best Buy or Staples.
I'll just buy the cheapest thing I can, stick Walmart. TeamSpeak on it, and call it a day. And then I'll just leave it with Fox.
There you go.
I'm not traveling with hardware anymore. It's just the rules are just too shady between countries now.
So let's move on to this. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. Last week I talked about a Python script that would let you pull down like the macOS restore images directly from Apple without actually having a Mac. So if you were trying to Hackintosh and didn't have a Mac to start with, I mentioned this last week when we were talking about the running OS X on a VM. This is that Python script. It's it's called Gib macOS. It is a it's a Python script, and it can actually create internet recovery USB installers on Windows. It can do it on Linux, and obviously it can do it on Macs because then it's got the native tools. So it's got a couple of different scripts on here. You can just clone the whole repo, read up on how to do it. It's all in Python, so you will need a Python 3 interpreter to make it work. But pretty much what this thing does is you run it, and it pretends to be a Mac in restore mode, trying to connect to Apple's server so it can restore the operating system, like the hard drive's died or something, right? And because Apple supports this, because you can't get a DVD with macOS on it anymore. So instead of doing the traditional get a DVD, plop it in, install the OS, they've set it up so that you can actually do a recovery over the internet. Macs and have it just as part of their BIOS. Well, BIOS is close enough. You know, it's actually part of the CMOS, but whatever. So, they've got a little program in there that can actually restore the disk by booting up, saying, "Hey, I want to do a restore off the internet," and it'll just pull down the OS and blow it on the machine, right? So this pretends to be a Mac trying to do that and lets you get the image so that you can then make a restore USB if you're actually trying to fix a real... Because it's not going to like do the Hackintosh thing for you, right? It's just going to get you that restore image. So maybe you just need to make a restore disk for a machine that can't connect to the internet because you have it air-gapped, or it's for a friend, or maybe you have a Mac in a Windows machine and the Mac is dead and you need to make a restore image, right? And for some reason you can't get the Mac to work. Well, this script lets you do that. And I think it's kind of fun because it also takes advantage of the fact that Apple's making assumptions that only Macs would connect to it in such a way. Somebody wrote a script to pretend to be a Mac and pull down the restore image. I think that's cool.
It is.
If you're into Hackintoshing, it's a useful tool. My understanding of the way Hackintoshing and that kind of stuff is that the license for the operating system is actually attached to the hardware. So unlike Windows, where you have a key, it's tied to the hardware of the Mac that you bought. So I think it is technically piracy if you don't have a Mac to run the OS on, or if you run it on a machine that's not a Mac. Don't violate any laws unless, you think it's funny. I mean, did I say that like that? Well, whatever, you know what I meant. don't sue me because you're stupid. How about that? Don't get caught. Does that mean if your CMOS battery dies, you can't do recovery anymore? If your CMOS battery dies, your computer's not going to keep time, but if you need to do recovery and the battery's dead, it's probably fine because it'll probably check the time against the against the internet before it goes very far. It could interfere with it, though, because then you wouldn't be able to, if your machine's not keeping accurate time, it wouldn't be able to like do proper SSL validation and stuff like that. So, and I do know a lot of the OS X images are, they're coded to be active for a certain period of time. I used to play around with Hackintoshing machines because I thought it was challenging and interesting. And I discovered that old Hackintosh images rarely worked because they actually had a, you had to go set the date back to like 2009 to make some of them work because they actually had a check for how long has it been since you downloaded this in the image, which I thought was rather interesting. And the last thing I have for you tonight is a write-up on using the Raspberry Pi to access various low-level hardware communication buses over the GPIO pins on the Raspi. And this does include a Raspi Zero, by the way. So this means that you could use the little, you know, $5, but you can't really ever get it for $5, so it's more like $15 Raspberry Pi Zero, as a means for getting at things like JTAG ports, SPI, I2C. And there's this write-up is on how to connect up to all these various different low-level hardware communication protocols using a Raspi in Python. So it kind of like a bus pirate. You need to know the wiring a little bit better than a bus pirate. And kind of like some of these dedicated hardware tools for getting into EEPROMs and stuff like that. But it's a way to do it with the commodity Raspi, and they're cheap and easy to get. You can just go on Amazon and order them, right? So, and he's got a reference for a circuit board if you want easier ways to hook things up. But if you needed to get into a JTAG port, or if you needed to get into an I2C bus, or you just wanted to watch one and see what's going on, this is how to use a Raspi to do that kind of low-level hardware hacking, which is useful. You know, if you're like at a con and one of the challenges is to break into the badge so that you can set your own lights and shit on it, you know, you could potentially do that over like I2C or OneWire or something like that, or SPI. That's a pretty common one. And yeah, this is how to do it with a commodity Raspi rather than having to go buy specialized hardware.
Sounds good.
So that's all I've really got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit. IHN is back on. As far as I know, we're doing it this weekend. In the IRC tonight, no change. We had Morps, Sardonic, Psychros, Herats, Iron Angel, and Madman. Madman, closing thoughts.
I think Sard's actually locked in a box somewhere.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
I hit the wrong button, so you got them both. I meant to hit this.
Why did it sound like you punched him in the balls?
Well, I'm assuming somebody's taken his balls and put them in a lockbox somewhere.
Okay.
Psychros, IHN is live only until I fix the website and build a show stream for it. I have the first one. I don't have a good place to post it. We talked about putting it on the decking feed, and we decided against that. So I need to get it set up on the website. Hopefully I can get that done this weekend. Until I do, it's live only.
Yeah, Saturday night, 9 p.m., I think. Is that right?
Roughly. About the roughly. We started on Saturday roughly the same time we start decking.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to get real interesting when we all start getting time changes and see who shows up when.
I just moved with you guys, man. So that's how my life was like that fucking for ages, doing all those shows. So, like, it fucks with my lunchtime schedule when you guys shift to daylight saving. Because the show starts for me at midday on Friday. But when you're fucking get your change, then it's 1 o'clock. Do I eat before the show or do I eat after the show? Fuck.
I just see RU sitting at his dining room table, you know, sitting there eating his lunch, late, hungry, saying, fucking Americans.
Like, because I do so much American stuff that involves time and fucking date shit, I'm either always a day ahead of myself or a day behind. It's ridiculous. I keep fucking up constantly. Like, I really, when I make appointments for stuff, I really have to double check that, yep, it's that day, that time. No, it's not a Thursday. Yeah, it drives you nuts. But anyway, my contributing to the final bit tonight is a movie called A Private War. I highly recommend it. A Private War.
Nice. Check it out. All right. Well, that's all I've got tonight. Oh. So, go ahead.
Forbes, any recommendations on getting into hardware hacking?
Oh. Let's see. What is Rat saying here? He wants to be able to take e-waste and rewrite it for whatever microcontroller, Wi-Fi. I think probably the best way to get started is actually Arduino. It is C programming, but they've done a fairly good job at lightening it up. Another good place to start, actually, if you want to see a hardcore Arduino project, would actually be 3D printers. Because Marlin, which is the firmware that most of your 8-bit 3D printers run on top of our Arduino, is a really complex project and a really good example of pushing these things to the limits, right? So most of your 3D printers are running on an ATmega 2560, which is our old-school Arduino Mega. So you'll see a lot of boards for 3D printers that what they've actually done is they've taken an Arduino Mega clone and integrated it with the RAMPS board into one circuit board. And either they'll have the drivers on it or they'll have them on the little risers. But 3D printers are interesting because it's an Arduino project out the wazoo, basically, for the 8-bit boards. There's an Arduino derivative called a Tensy, or TEENSY. The 3.0 is, I think, actually an ARM processor, but it's compatible with the Arduino IDE. And the nice thing about the Tensy, it's a pjrc.com, if I'm remembering correctly. If you Google Tensy 3.0, 3.2, whatever they're up to now, on microcontroller, you'll find the website. And he has got a huge list of examples, projects that people have built with the Tensy boards, which are, pin compatible, or they're not pin compatible, but they're compatible with Arduino.
Make a Game Boy with an Arduino?
Yep, there is such a thing as a Arduino Boy. And there are actually these little micro game cards, which are Arduinos with a little LCD screen made into like a credit card format, and they've got like Tetris and shit on them. So, but Arduino is a really good place to start with hardware hacking. On top of a basic Arduino kit, I would get a decent soldering iron, which you can get some of the Chinese ones now that aren't too bad for like $50. That's always extremely helpful because you're going to figure out really quick DuPont pins suck. So either you buy the little DuPont pin kits, which are a bunch of pre-cabled things, or you get the thing for doing the crimps yourselves. And I hate crimping DuPont connectors. Those things are fiddly as fuck. Anyways, you got a $15 fire starter for one of those Weller wood burners or automotive soldering irons. They work, but you're going to go through that thing so fast it's not even funny. Getting you a decent soldering station that has replaceable tips is, yeah, I know it says soldering. It's a wood burning station. If it doesn't have an adjustable temperature, it's not a real soldering iron, because you need to be able to control the temperature. Because what'll happen is if you get like one of those 30-watt fire starters, they're either, you'll find they're really good at one or two things and shit for everything else. So if you're trying to do fine work with one of those, you can't turn the temperature down and you'll find yourself melting the component leads. Or if you're trying to do big, thick, like speaker wire or big ground traces where you've got, like, you know, fat leads off big capacitors and shit like that, it can't get hot enough to actually heat up the component you're working on. So, but you're going to figure, I mean, you can get away with the breadboard and the DuPont connectors to get started with. If you want a YouTube video to watch for some interesting projects, Great Scott is good at different projects like that. There's another guy who does really good projects on YouTube for electronics, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. Big Clive does teardowns of various projects, so you can see how things work, and he tends to doodle out the schematic, so that's another good one. But yeah, Arduino is a good place to start if you're just wanting to learn, because there's tons of tutorials and stuff out there for it, so you're not hurting for guidance. And then once you kind of get the basics down of what a, you know, what you're going to want a microcontroller to do versus what you're going to try to do with discrete logic, understand their voltages, understand control signals, then you can start moving on to some of the more esoteric stuff. But yeah, that's how long have we been running? We're hitting
like 2 hours.
We're coming 90 minute mark. We hit the 90 minute mark, so it's probably time to stop. You know, it's time to stop.
Another fun project you might want to look into. Some engineering friends of mine played with it. An angry box. Those are kind of funny.
Yeah, go dig up the old school phone freaking boxes. Those are fun to read about too.
All right, send the show out. We can continue the conversation after the show.
Okay. I'm going to play the sounds.
Some people only have limited space.
Sounds go nose down and call it a night.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Tauntauns, Mr. President.